Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello, I'm Em, and today I'll be speaking to Rosamond and her husband, Jonathan. Rosamond discovered she had breast cancer at the beginning of 2021 and is currently undergoing treatment. During this time, she and Jonathan have spoken publicly about their experiences of going through cancer together. Rosamond and Jonathan, thank you both for joining me.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you very much.
So could you please start off by telling me a little bit about your diagnosis and treatment that you've had so far?
Yes, so I found a lump on my right breast in December, just at the end of last year, and went to the doctor and was referred to the breast clinic. It all happened very quickly. I was so impressed with the NHS, and because you hear sort of horror stories about cancer services being hit during the pandemic, but it was, in my personal experience, was it was so quick and efficient and so smooth. So yeah, I went to the breast clinic and had a mammogram and ultrasound and biopsy, and that was 2 days before Christmas, and they said they could tell from the scan that there was a 95% chance it was cancer, but we had to wait for the biopsy results to be 100% sure, which was going to be 2 weeks because of Christmas and New Year. So it was a bit of a weird Christmas. Obviously 95 is quite a high chance, so we were sort of coming to terms with it, really, I think, over that period. In a way, it was quite good that we couldn't see anyone, so because of the pandemic rules, so we sort of had time as a family to come to terms with it, and then got the official diagnosis on 6th of January, and then went into all the pre-chemo tests in January, and then started chemo before the end of January. It was all pretty quick. So now at the stage I am now, I've had 11 cycles of chemo, and I've got 5 more to go.
Wow. Okay. So that's obviously quite a lot that you've already dealt with, but at least you're already past that halfway point. And you've both obviously had a very strong reaction to this. It's such a huge blow to receive, and around Christmas time as well, which is already a very stressful period, and obviously in the midst of a pandemic, it's just one thing on top of another. But between the two of you, how did you react? Were there any major differences, any similarities between the two of you?
Yeah, I think there was just a sense from both of us, there was just a shock, because I don't think her husband really necessarily believed that she certainly didn't think she had cancer when she went into the breast clinic, and even when she was like sitting there having these tests, I don't think she really thought, because I was getting like texts back from her. And then I just think like, yeah, when she came back and they were obviously talking about the 95% thing, it didn't really like massively sink in at all. That's the thing, I think we just completely weren't expecting it at all. So it's hard to kind of process that. And also it was this purgatory, because we weren't going to go back to the doctors until the first week of January. So it was just quite a lot of sitting around thinking about something that we thought was coming, but also having no idea what that meant. Because when you go to like the first oncology meeting, which I went to with Rosamond, they throw so much information at you about things that you've never heard of before. So you sit there and just have to take that all in. And that's confusing. But in the 2 weeks between the tests and going in there, we didn't even have that information. So it was all just completely unknown. It was just shock, really, and trying to wait for that oncology meeting. And then after the oncology meeting, it pretty much becomes a process that you don't have any control over. And I mean, like, in a slightly good way, because you're just, you know, she was told to go to various things and various tests, which are awful for her, but necessary. And then you know when your dates are, and then you go to those dates, and so it's sort of taken a bit out of your hands, which I think actually, for me, felt a tiny bit better than the 2 weeks before official diagnosis and the sort of 2 weeks of tests afterwards, because the unknowingness and the uncertainty is really agonizing. And while the treatment is largely awful, at least you know you're doing it for a reason and you've started on it, and you just have to kind of like get through the months-long slog and then hopefully everything's fine. But yeah, I think that's the thing. It was just shock, really.
And would you say the same, Rosamund, that period of kind of just being able to hand over control a little bit, did that ease anything for you at all? Or was it still very much this kind of state of anxiety, I guess?
Yes, I would say it definitely eased. You know, there was just a sense that we were doing something and we were getting somewhere. And once treatment had started, then, you know, you could look at the treatment plan and say, this is the purpose of this and this is why we're doing it. And it's awful, but we're doing it. Whereas that sort of first month of, you know, waiting for the diagnosis, getting the diagnosis, then having all those, you know, the CAT scan, the MRI, the liver function test, the bone scan, like all those different things. It's like a cannula in a different bit of your arm every other day. It's like, it's all of that is quite grim. And yeah, when they first told me I was going to get a PICC line, I thought it sounded awful. I was like, a tube going into my chest that's there for 6 months. It just sounds horrific.
Yeah.
But then the reality of having a PICC line is that you don't have to have endless cannulas. It's actually amazing. So I love my PICC line now. It's the best thing.
I don't think I expected to hear that, but I love my PICC line. It's fantastic. yeah, especially contrasted to the initial reaction of like, oh no, I really don't want to do any of these things. But I guess your standards change as you start to move through that, and you're thinking like, well, I guess it could still be a little bit worse somehow.
Yeah, I think probably the best advice is that it's different for everyone. So when the oncologist gives you that long list of side effects, you should kind of, it's reassuring to think that you won't get all of those and you might only get certain ones, and there's kind of no way of knowing how your body is going to react to it. So it's kind of go into it with optimism, but also being aware of everything that can happen, because everything that can happen does have a sort of treatment or a cure. The oncologist can help with so much, you know, mouth ulcers, anything that's going on with you, they can kind of prescribed something. I was sleeping really badly at first because of the steroids, and then when you haven't slept and then you don't feel well and you're so tired anyway, it just made it much harder. And when I told the oncologist, she was like, oh, I can prescribe you some sleeping pills. And there's sort of is an answer for everything, so do kind of be really, really open about your symptoms and tell the oncologist everything, because there's kind of something for everything.
In one of your recent columns that you wrote for The Times, you compared cancer to having a baby, which when I first read that, it kind of struck me as like, oh, I've never heard that analogy before. And it seemed a bit, well, unexpected, a bit out there. But could you speak a little bit more on that analogy?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are loads of similarities. I mean, in terms of how you feel, the fatigue and the chemo brain is very similar to baby brain, I would say. And things like the way that people react to you, people are so kind. Our friends have been so amazing, kind of leaving lasagnas on the doorstep and helping out as much as possible as they can with things like childcare for us. And when I had a baby, and also when I got cancer, is that there's this whole world of, you know, books and advice, and you know, so-and-so's had breast cancer and it's like yours, and like you could chat to her and she's got some advice. And then there are forums and Instagram accounts and, you know, podcasts, and there's just kind of so much information out there, and it is like this whole community. And another way in which having cancer is a bit like having a baby is that it's kind of different for everyone. And there are so many different symptoms and different elements of it and different ways of dealing with things, and that things might work for some people that don't necessarily work for other people. But there's just kind of so much advice out there, and some of it is incredibly helpful. Like I've really had some, you know, indispensable advice from people that I've just met on Instagram. And obviously some advice on the internet is not so useful. Yeah, I thought there were definitely a lot of similarities. It's obviously a less joyful time.
Yeah, of course. So you both have experience as parents. You've done the new baby thing, and now you're having to do this horrible cancer thing. And going through that and seeing other people's reactions to it. Jonathan, is there anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, I think another reason actually why it's quite similar is because also there's this thing where people pay a lot of attention to your first kid and like your, and also your first chemo and your diagnosis. But by the time it comes like the second child and the second chemo, people tend to move on to other things. And sort of like there are definitely friends who have stuck through. You know, there's a friend who was still bringing us stuff on chemo 11, which is impressive. Because this isn't bitter, it's just a fact. Like it just becomes less newsworthy to other people. I don't know. I think like one thing about the kids though is that without them, I think this actually would have been quite a lot harder, because every chemo that wasn't had is on a Friday. And actually, to be honest, like Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays and weekdays aren't that different anyway, because we're all at home. But I think like kind of if we were stuck at home at the weekend together, obviously when she's, especially the times when she's felt really low and like really ropey, and that's during the week as well, then it would just would have been miserable. Like kind of, but I think because our kids are 6 and 4 and they're clearly a bit daft. So I think they do liven the spirits up a lot. And without them, I actually think this would have been quite a lot harder. I think kind of having a couple of humans in the house who just say really silly things is a great help when you're going through something that as grown-ups we understandably obsess over and worry about and like kind of are fearful about. If you've got two people who aren't like that, it can actually sort of make the whole process, I think, more bearable.
Yeah, they're a good distraction.
Yeah, it sounds like you really need those moments of levity when, as you say, it's an ongoing process that is so difficult throughout. But I wonder, could you each speak a little bit more on that then? Because as someone outside of this process and as someone who doesn't have children, how has that been coping with explaining to your children? Because like you say, they're quite young. And I think you did mention in your writing at points, they were quite confused about you losing your hair. And, you know, perhaps making comments that you would rather not have. So how have you navigated that and explaining to them what's going on?
I think we decided from the beginning to be very, very honest with them, because I was diagnosed at the beginning of January, just as we were going into lockdown. So school was closed. All four of us were in the house all the time. There was kind of no way of them not knowing. And I think if they'd have sort of heard whispers of cancer around the house, then that would have been far scarier than us just being very kind of open and honest about the whole thing. And also our eldest Ezra, he's six and a half, and he does know. So my aunt died of cancer last year, so he is aware of cancer. And I think before my diagnosis, I think he would have thought cancer kills you, but you have cancer and then you die. And I think we've really wanted to be able to explain to him that what I have, my diagnosis is treatable, and it's very, very different to the cancer that my aunt had. It's going to be treated and it will get better. So we're going to be, I checked with the doctor that I could say that before I said it to him. Mm. But yeah, the doctor was very positive about the prognosis. And I think we're really lucky that we've caught it before it spread. My breast cancer is in a couple of different points in the breast and it's in the lymph nodes. So it's multifocal, but it hasn't spread beyond that. So I think we're lucky that we've kind of caught it in time for it to be a good prognosis. And I think they're very positive that after this run of chemotherapy and the mastectomy, then hopefully I'll be out of the woods. The fact that it's kind of, you know, there is an end in sight and it's a positive end, allows us to be very honest with our kids, which helps.
Yeah, I think we did sort of have like a slight chat about whether we'd talk about telling them, and then you're just like, we'll tell them. But I mean, like, but I do agree. It's like sort of it just wasn't possible to hide it at all. And you know, like, there's obviously books and like leaflets lying around. I think if we had younger children, you can probably hide it, but I mean, Ezra can read now, so you can't hide things from them annoyingly when they get a bit older. So yeah, we did. And to be honest, like, he's Eden, who's four, just doesn't really obviously get it, and she sort of says a few things about it, but I mean, it's all nonsense because that's what she's for. But I think like Ezra sort of around the same time, he just sort of got really into David Bowie, and he had a there's a book, a kid's book about Bowie, and at the end of it, it talks about how like he died and like stuff like that. So it sounds really macabre, but he has talked randomly at the school gate to some friends of ours once about how like David Bowie had cancer, but he was in his 70s and it was a bad cancer, and there were other cancers that were fine. And there's other parents that are like, all right, but he does get it, and also I think it's helped being honest with them, because I think they've actually been quite sympathetic, and they sort of know about your like bad arm, which they talk about the PIC line. And also there's things that you can't hide, like it's not even so much the hair, but I think that obviously is something that they've noticed more recently. But I mean, before you did chemo, you didn't tend to, I mean, you turn it's like it wasn't even up and about loads, like way more than I think lots of people don't do with chemotherapy. But clearly there were some times when you like have a lie down and sleep in the day, which wasn't something that you tended to do normally. So I think like kind of it, them knowing and like sort of understanding that this thing is going on means that you don't have to like pretend that Rosamund's popped out and closed the bedroom door, because it's just kind of impossible to hide after a while.
And I think they've been very understanding, and I've talked about how I can't like really lift them in my left arm with the PIC line and stuff, and we talked quite a lot about my hair and things, and I think they've been quite grown up about it. I mean, Ezra especially.
Yeah, kids can be remarkably perceptive sometimes, even when you think they're off in their own world. They do pick up on these things. And I think it's brilliant that you have shared it with them, and they're clearly like have an understanding of it. And Ezra in particular sounds like he's just, he's a very understanding kid, and also with an interest in David Bowie, that's something for a 6-year-old. But obviously, as well as sharing with your children, your family, you've chosen to speak about this more publicly, which a lot of people choose to do, but maybe not necessarily while you're going through the process of treatment. Normally, it's more retrospective. So how have you found that kind of sharing your journey with everyone else in such a public way?
I found it quite cathartic. I think I enjoy writing that column in the Sunday Times style, and I find it sort of gives structure to the course of treatment in a way. So the column runs every sort of 2 to 3 weeks approximately, and when I sit down to write it, it's kind of like, where am I in the journey now? And I do feel like it sort of helps me feel like I'm kind of going through it like it is a journey. And also, I've had so many messages on social media from people who say they found it really, really helpful to read about if they're going through the same thing. And I understand, because when I was diagnosed, I was like Googling everything. I just wanted to read everything. I just wanted all the information there was. And it's just so, I mean, breast cancer is incredibly, incredibly common. I think it's 1 in 8 women will get breast cancer. Like it's such a huge amount of people. I can see how it is speaking to a lot of people, because everyone, probably everybody almost knows somebody who's been through it.
Yeah, I think it is the messages, isn't it? It's like you and me, although it's not really that important. It's not about me, but like you do get quite a few messages from people. I think like the column, and I guess like social media and other things, it does provide a support for people that are going through it. If they can read this sort of personal advice, that's also practical. I think it provides something that maybe isn't available in sort of the off-the-shelf books about the disease. Like you can kind of, and I think you've learned quite a lot from other people when there's been certain things with chemo that have been rubbish. So whether it was like a bad mouth or like things to do with your nails or your eyebrows or something, I was like the stuff that you found mostly, I think, of like social media or like little bits of advice that people gave to try and help those situations. And I think it's the same with the column. I think people who are going through it, you've seen it in like the comments and people who like message you saying, thank you for this. I'm going through this. It resonates. It's great to read it, etc. So it's sort of it helps you, but also it helps them as well. Whereas I'm just staff in the paper, so I'm got a choice.
I'm sure that's not true. I'm sure you're also you're giving a perspective that actually we don't see very often, and I'm really glad that the two of you are on here together to kind of show us this both sides, because we always speak about cancer as being a personal experience, but in reality it's not. It's affecting you, Jonathan. It's, you know, it's to some degree affecting your children, even if it's they're not experiencing it as a negative thing. There's still things going on that they're not used to. And I suppose this leads to me asking, and I hope this isn't too much of a personal question, but has this changed your relationship at all? Because this is something you are going through together.
I think it definitely has. Jonathan will probably say, no, it hasn't. But I feel like when you're over the course of a relationship, lots of things change the nature of a relationship. Like, obviously, when we first got together, life was different then to when you then have children, and then your life change, and then the nature of your relationship changes. And then when you go through something like cancer, it changes again. Mm. It's, you know, I mean, is it harsh to say it's less fun? Because we're just not doing the fun things that we used to do. And I'm going to bed at 9:30 every night because I'm so exhausted every day. And I haven't drunk alcohol since my diagnosis. Like, our days of going out for nice dinners are kind of, they feel like a distant memory. Yeah, I feel like we will reclaim the life we once had once this is over. This is like a period of time where we have to deal with this. And obviously, when you go through the type of chemotherapy that I'm going through, which the effect it has on your appearance and your hair and brows and eyelashes falling out and stuff, that does affect your confidence as well, and just sort of how attractive you feel and how much you want to, you know, see people and do anything. So I think Jonathan's role is kind of carer almost at the moment, and yeah, but we'll come out the other side.
Yeah, I mean, I disagree. But no, I mean, obviously it's changed, and I don't disagree with all that at all. But I mean, there were certain things, like one of Rosamund's friends said to me, I heard that you're like starting to cook. It's like, I've always cooked like 90% more than Rosamund anyway. So it's not like I've just started to take the bins out or like sort of clean up after us. It's sort of like there were loads of stuff that, frankly, I did anyway. So I think, like, sort of, so there's that. And I think also it's not like a normal time. It still isn't a normal time. And like, we'll, like, the end of chemo is before the end of like all restrictions are meant to be lifted. So you said, yeah, fine, we haven't been out for dinners and stuff like that. But then people weren't going out for dinners anyway because all the restaurants were closed. So I think, like, I think the one of the weird things about this, and I think it's been good and bad, I think, about having it during a pandemic, is like the bad thing is, for example, we've had very, very little help from other people. Like, sort of like my mum, who lives relatively locally, would have happily helped out on chemo days, but she didn't want to until she had both vaccinations, which she only had like a week or so ago. So obviously she's managed to skip most of the chemos. But you know, like, so that's the bad thing. But the good thing is that it wasn't like we were missing out on stuff. I think there's a sense it would have been harder if from the very start people were having parties and dinners and going to gigs and all these things that we might have wanted to do, and Rosamund might have felt too tired. Even the fact that work has been largely, for Rosamund, that she's done, has been largely by video. It means that it's probably been more possible because you haven't got the tiring trip to go to places. So yeah, it has definitely changed, and it is definitely less fun when Rosamund has cancer than when she didn't have cancer. But I think, but I do think that because of lockdown and because of the pandemic, it's been really strange anyway. I mean, from March 2020, we've spent an inordinate amount of time with each other, Like, we never used to see each other in the days at all, but we spent every day with each other since like March 2020. So that was different. It wasn't like this was jolting something that was normal anyway. It wasn't normal in the first place. So I don't know if I, in my head, well, I agree, yes, there are lots of things that are different. It's not going off something that was normal in the first place, I don't think. And also, as been said, I see it as like a really bad blip. But it's not like sort of, one of us is, I'm not going to do an analogy because it would be inappropriate. But it's not. But basically, there are things that can be more permanent, I think, than what's going through. And once this is all over, then I assume, and the pandemic's over, then we'll just remember these 2 years as dreadful, and then move on.
Yeah, thank you very much both for your honesty there. And also, Jonathan, I absolutely agree. It's such a strange time anyway that I think it's easy to get all these things kind of mixed up together. Obviously, things are going to change. I think anyone listening who has been on either side of a cancer diagnosis will know that, yes, that changes things a lot, but so has the last year and a half. It's just been no one saw it coming. Everyone's just had to adapt. And I guess that's what you've done as well, is just had to adapt. And I love that you're already seeing this as a blip, and it is something that's going to soon be in the rear view, and you will be able to go out and go to restaurants again and have a drink and be in the world, really. And yeah, I think it'll be really great when you do. Because, like you say, it's just 2 years of not so great times. But hopefully things will feel amazing again when they come back. And so I have one more question for you. And Jonathan, I kind of want to ask you about this one. What might you say to someone else who is supporting a loved one through breast cancer?
Yeah, I think the support thing is just, I kind of just think of it as really simple. It's just, there's nothing, I don't think there's that much profound to say. You just have to kind of put the other person first. I mean, it's kind of just it, really. I think kind of, and also one thing with Rosamund, it's not a frustration, but like she can be quite hard to do things for, because she doesn't necessarily want to have things done for her. So I think, kind of there's, but then I think that's also a sense that like nobody wants to sit around feeling particularly useless. So yeah, you just adjust your life. So I mean, like, I think first of all, you if you can, I know not everyone can, but if you can, always like obviously take them to chemo and certainly pick them up. That seems to be sort of the no-brainer if you can, obviously, especially like picking them up as well, because it's pretty bleak when you finished all that. So that's one thing. And then also just like organize everything. So don't let them, the person who's going through cancer, organize anything about like who's going to look after the kids and like stuff like that. Rosamund doesn't think I'm very good at doing the online shopping order, so she still does that because she thinks I always miss things. So, but I think physical stuff and helping out and anything that's a bit annoying, you just do it. And I think, sometimes I'm not like a wildly optimistic person, but I do think like, sort of it's better not to sort of just mope around when this is going on. But sometimes I think Rosamund's a bit like, can you not like stop saying, well, everything's going to be great? Because obviously that was during a particularly low time a few weeks ago. So then you just stop the kind of like slightly fake positivity act and just move on with some reality. So yeah, it's just about adjusting. But by and large, it's just doing everything practical that they don't really want to do that will help them out. And yeah, I finally learned how to cook, so that's nice.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned at the start of that, I don't know how true this is, Rosamund, that you might not be able to accept that support all the time, which is something that we actually hear a lot. And it is true, people don't want to be put in that position where they feel like they have to kind of relent something. Have you got better at accepting that support, or do you still find it a bit difficult at times?
I would say that there are times when I just need to go for a lie down, and I just need to like shut the door and be left alone. And Jonathan is brilliant at whenever that is, making that happen. And I don't have to be, I don't have to do anything or deal with the kids or anything. I guess it's when I'm actually feeling okay and I'm doing something that I quite enjoy, like maybe cooking dinner with the radio on, and Jonathan might say, "You go and rest, I'll do this." I'm like, "No, I want to do it. I'm enjoying doing it." Maybe I find it difficult when I'm sort of told to go and rest, but then when I want to go and rest, then I'm very, very appreciative that I can. I'm very grateful. And also all the kind of practical things, which actually I probably haven't said thank you to Jonathan for enough, because because he deals with it all so much that I don't even think about it. So I don't even think about how grateful I am. But I did, when our first column ran in the Sunday Times, and I had lots of messages from people on social media and lots of people sort of giving their advice, because that was, the first column was like up to just before chemo started. Mm. And one woman on there said, make sure you do all the chores around the house before chemo so that you don't have to do anything afterwards. And it kind of broke my heart, because I thought, I'm so lucky that I don't have to think about that. I don't have to think, oh, I should do some washing because I won't want to do the washing tomorrow. Jonathan does kind of take care of lots of stuff that I don't even think about. I'm very lucky.
Yeah, but then, I mean, you have got cancer and I haven't.
Yeah, and also making it sound like Jonathan doesn't do stuff around the house when I don't have cancer, which is very, very egalitarian in this house. In fact, Jonathan probably did more of everything pre-cancer anyway. But I mean, organising all the childcare and stuff has just been, it's like, I just don't even have to think about it, which is, it's nice not to have to think about practical stuff.
I just think, like, also we've maintained a way to try and, like, get some humour around this. I think that's one role as well, because I think we sort of had to. I mean, it's things like, I don't know, like, I can't remember why, but like last week, randomly, I was like, oh, you know what would have made this year a bit better? And you were like, oh yeah, if I didn't have cancer. And I was like, yes. So would have been. I mean, I'm not saying it's, it doesn't sound particularly funny secondhand, but I think it's things like that. And then randomly last week, and I think Rosman finds it very, very boring when I talk about which route we take to places, but I think like the journey into hospital last week, for some reason, I can't remember why, it took us the different route, which meant we drove past the Gherkin and Cheese Grater and all these. Basically, we went through all the skyscrapers in London. I was like, this is a lovely journey. We don't normally do this. How nice to sort of be how nice to be sharing this trip on a Friday morning on the way to chemo. And actually I did genuinely enjoy that journey. But I think it's about doing that. We've had to try and maintain some positivity and I think a sense of absurdity as well about this, because it is kind of absurd that she's going through it. Well, I think it still feels a bit absurd. And so you then have to sort of maintain that level of disbelief, and that can result in slightly dark but humour. But I mean, I don't know what else we're going to do, really.
And also I think the kids are very good at bringing the humour. When the other day Ezra shouted downstairs, "Mum, come upstairs now!" And then he sort of paused, and it was like he remembered, and then he said, "Oh, just come as quickly as you can with your cancer." It's very, very funny. Very funny. So they're being very sweet, which is entertaining.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so strange how from a certain perspective you could look at some of these things, especially a comment from a child, and think, oh god, I don't want to deal with that right now. But if you clearly have the support between one another, though, that you are able to kind of shoulder that burden in a way that it's becoming something you are going through together and can kind of have a little laugh about now and then, which I think is really important. And yeah, I can see it just speaking to you now, how that comes across in your relationship. Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Rosamund and Jonathan.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
To keep up with Rosamund and her writing, you can find her on Instagram via @RosamundDean. You can also find Jonathan and more of his writing on Twitter @JonathanDean_. You can also follow their column in the Style section of the Sunday Times. Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.